You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Mo Muncy, and alongside me as always, now I can say as always because it's three straight days. What a treat. It's Mr. Scott Perry. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Mo. Just taking in the draft today.
Enjoying it. Yeah, enjoying no stress, it. Yep, no pressure. Exactly. Scott's looking fly, suited and booted. I'm here. It's 4 a.m. I'm in a training jersey because right now it's a little bit hot over here in the UK.
Okay.
Americans always laugh. You know, I've seen on Twitter a lot, right? let me do the maths on this. So in the UK right now is 86 Fahrenheit. That's like 30 Celsius, which isn't that hot for America. So Americans online, they'd be laughing at how we find this so warm.
Yes.
But the houses here are built to keep heat in, and the climate here is so humid. So even though it's only 86, it feels like 806 because that's just the way it is. So we're here, but we've been watching the NBA draft. We've got a lot to talk about because yesterday Scott and I taped an episode, and about 30 minutes after we finished taping, a huge trade was announced in the NBA. And it involved Scott's former team, the New York Knicks, and their crosstown rivals, the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets sent Mikal Bridges to the Knicks in exchange for Bogdanović, four unprotected first-round picks, 25, 27, 29, and 31, a 2025 protected first-rounder rerouted from the Bucks, 28 unprotected pick swap, and a 2025 second-round pick. A staggering amount of draft picks in exchange for Mikal Bridges. Number one, this makes Chicago look even worse that they couldn't even get one pick for Alex Caruso. Right. Number two, as Brooklyn kind of told Bridges that they were going to potentially trade him and teams like the Houston Rockets and the Utah Jazz were interested, Mikal Bridges told the Brooklyn Nets he wants to go to New York to play with his college buddies from his Villanova team in DiVincenzo and Hart and Brunson. So he had all the leverage in the deal. So it's a little bit of an overpay, but the Knicks got the guy that they really wanted. Scott, what's your reaction to that trade?
Well, that's the key thing right there, Mo, is that they got the guy that they wanted. So for them, the cost wasn't too much. Now, you know, in the grand scheme of things, yeah, you can look at it. Mikal Bridges has never been an all-star. So you gave up an awful lot of draft capital to go get him. But on the other hand, I really like the move for the Knicks because the guy fits in seamlessly. We talked about him going to play with his three other college teammates. He is a versatile defender who's going to, again, fit not only seamlessly with his former college teammates, but the organization as a whole. Coach Thibodeau's going to like the guy. You're getting a guy that can defend anywhere from the one position all the way up to the four position. So you're looking, what you're doing at this time of year, you look at who just won the championship. The champion came out of the Eastern Conference. It was the Boston Celtics. They have the best two wings on one team, in my view, in Tatum and Brown. So now you're trying to look at how can we defend those guys so we can challenge the Boston Celtics group. I like it for the Knicks because, again, when you make a trade, a lot of times you never know if a guy's personality is going to fit all the way. This case, there is no guesswork with that here. And so for them, the price wasn't too steep for that knowledge. They will be a team that for sure, as long as they can stay healthy, will be battling it out in the Eastern Conference and pose a very formidable threat to the Boston Celtics next season.
Well, Mikal Bridges hasn't missed a game since high school. He played 83 games last season because of the trade. And I know Tom Thibodeau is just looking at that and thinking, yep, I've got my guy.
And I probably should have started with that, saying that. And I respect that totally, man. And especially in today's game, you don't have many guys that are playing a full 82. Obviously, he's taking pride in doing that. And I would expect him to continue that streak when he gets to New York.
Well, the Knicks are cooking up, Scott. And do you know what they're cooking up there in New York? They're making some wing stop because now with Mikal Bridges and re-signing OG Anunoby for a hefty figure, $212.5 million over 5 years. That comes out at over $40 million bucks a year for my guy. they got two of the best wing defenders in the entire NBA. Now, it's fantastic for the Knicks. Now, here's my thing. Number one, when you build a team to take down the reigning champions in your conference, we saw the Timberwolves do that, and it worked perfectly. However, once they achieved their goal of eliminating the reigning champs, it didn't go so well for them in the next round because their team was built to take down the Nuggets. The other thing is the Celtics have five guys that can all defend and they can all shoot. Yep. The Knicks, you only have four guys on either end because it's like you're going to have four guys who can play great defense and Jalen Brunson. And on offense, you're going to have four guys that can shoot plus Mitchell Robinson or Isaiah Hartenstein. So I like the theory of it, and it may well work. This is if they all stay healthy, because this also adds to their bench as well, because now either Josh Hart or DiVincenzo is going to be coming off the bench. That's going to be great minutes for them. I like what they're doing, but it is to be noted to take caution to building a team to take down a rival.
Not knowing for sure who they're going to start, I would assume it would be Brunson with Bridges at the two, Ananobi at the three, Julius Randle at the four, and either Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson at the five. But to your point, I like the bench and the bench toughness that the Knicks have. And the Celtics bench grew as the year went along. I give them credit because that was my big concern with them during the season. But Miles McBride proved very worthy during the Knicks playoff run this year. If you now you put Josh Hart back, if he's coming off the bench, and DiVincenzo coming off the bench, both of those guys were playing 45 minutes plus in playoff games throughout the run. So you're going to have not only a deep but experienced team, and you're going to have toughness. And they should be able to, if they, you know, unfortunately have any type of injury along the way, they have guys that can have proven that they can step up in a starter's role and play, whether it be, you know, replace that injured starter, whether it be a week, 2 weeks, or a month. And so that's going to be a huge value for this Knicks team.
Do you see them keeping hold of Julius Randle now? Because, you know, adding Bridges, who was a great, probably one of the league's best role players when he was in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Brooklyn and he looked like a star for that stretch in Brooklyn when he first got there. And then things come kind of simmered down. But do you think that they're going to hold on to Julius Randle? Because now these guys need more touches. You've given OG all of this money. He's going to want a bigger role in the offense too.
Look, I hear all of this talk about Julius Randle, or people seem to forget who Julius Randle is. Julius Randle is the only three-time All-Star on his team. He's the only two-time All-NBA player. You cannot be rushing to get him out of the building because, look, and I love OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges, but they're not guys that you are running offense through. They play off of the other good players, the top players. So they're in their best position playing off of Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle, because those are your two guys who can really go get buckets against a set defense. And so that's why another reason I love the move for Mikal Bridges, it puts him back in a more similar role to what he was in when he was in Phoenix, when that team went to the finals. So no, Julius Randle, you hold on to him unless you can replace him with another all-NBA player or all-star performer. Because without him, then I don't know that the Knicks still would be formidable, but they would miss a guy who could go create offense against a set defense. And when things broke down and everything wouldn't just have to be on Jalen Brunson's shoulders to do that.
Absolutely. There was another trade involving the Brooklyn Nets last night, and it was a pick-related trade. There was no players involved, but it was between the Brooklyn Nets and the Houston Rockets. The Brooklyn Nets got their 2025 first-round pick back, and they got their 2026 first-round pick. I think the 25 one was a pick swap, and the Rockets received the Suns pick for 2027 and 2029. Now, a lot of people were talking about that after it happened, and Woj even alluded to it, saying that the Houston Rockets want to go and get Kevin Durant. And the reason why they've given the Nets their picks back and taken the Suns picks instead is so that they can offer them back to the Suns if they want to go in the way of a rebuild. Today, the owner of the Suns, Matt Ishbia, came out and issued a statement that they love Kevin Durant and they want to keep him and whatnot. Do you think this is smoke and mirrors? Do you think KD is going to be on the move? Do you think Booker's going to be on the move? Or do you think the Suns are going to try run it back?
Everything I've heard to this point, Mo, is that KD is still going to be in Phoenix. And so I'm going to take Matt Ishbia at his word, and my sources that I've heard from, that him not going anywhere, you know, leaving Phoenix or them looking to trade him anytime soon. Now, once the season starts and if things start to falter, then now we can revisit that conversation then. But look, it's to trade Kevin Durant after you gave up your whole, you know, half your franchise for him in terms of all your draft assets and everything of that nature. You got to try to, in my opinion, they're just in a position, let's try to run it back and just hope, beyond hope, that Bradley Beal can finally stay healthy and so that you can get an extended look, an extended feel for having Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker playing and see what that can net you. Now, and they'll be able to know if they can go through the first half of the season next year and those guys are all healthy and they're struggling to be in the top four in the West, okay, then maybe you at that time start to visit, how do we break this up a little bit? But I sit here, and from all I've heard, Kevin Durant, I expect to see him playing for the Phoenix Suns to begin the year.
Now, before we keep moving to what happened today, I just want to get your reaction to OG's deal, the 5 years, $212.5 million, because a lot of people weren't expecting him to command this amount of money on the market. You know, he opted out of his contract, hit free agency. And since he's been with the Knicks, they only lost three games in a regular season with him in the lineup. So he's obviously shown his worth. What was your reaction to OG getting that deal?
It was the richest deal in Knicks history. So it's a little bit of an eye-opener. But the Knicks were in the position, I believe, they felt they had to keep him, even if it is somewhat of an overpay for him. And I say overpay mainly because of his injury history, not from what in terms of what he produced for this team while he was healthy this year. He's a great fit there, as it was obvious for everybody to see. But again, you're paying that amount of money for a guy who's never been an all-star in this league. But he can contribute to your organization and help you win. He's proven that. So they had to keep him because, look, remember, they gave up a couple picks and R.J. Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley, who were two guys who were very important there in New York, who had helped them go to the conference semifinals the year before. So they couldn't come up empty by not having him. And I'm sure the fact that Philadelphia is sitting there in the division with over $50 million in cap space, they had to be more aggressive and not take a chance that they offer him a full max for 4 years, you know, once he hit the market. So they had to make an aggressive enough offer to keep him from going out to the market on July 1st.
Absolutely. Now, the NBA draft was tonight, or last night if you guys are listening to this in the morning, and the day started off with a trade between the Washington Wizards and the Portland Trailblazers. The Washington Wizards sent Denny Avdija to Portland in exchange for Malcolm Brogdon, who will most likely be on the market and traded further on, and the 14th pick in tonight's draft, and the 2029 first-round pick, and the most favorable of their two second-round picks in a deal, sorry. For the Blazers, I get why they did this. They get under the first apron, and they get more financial flexibility. But they won 21 games this season, and you've traded now two first-round picks and two second-round picks for who essentially is just a role player. Why did they do this deal?
That's a good question, Mo. That is a very good question. Look, they're in a tough Western Conference, and no disrespect to Denny Avdija. He's a, you know, like you said, he's a solid young player, role player. He's coming off a team that had a franchise worst 15 wins last season in Washington, has not experienced winning in this league. So, you know, this guy has to, you know, trying to figure out, you know, what's behind that deal. They must like his versatility, but I don't know that. And from what I see, you know, they're getting off Brogdon and they're getting draft, you know, and they gave up draft capital to get this guy. So they must really like the player, but I don't know how he helps Portland move up the ladder in the Western Conference. I just don't. So it was a little bit of a puzzling move to me. But again, I'm not in their room, and
they're tanking for
their group must like it. Yeah,
they're gonna keep it going.
But you don't. If you're tanking, you don't want to give up your draft capital.
That's a fact. But it is 2029, so that's a few.
No,
years
it's still right. It's a few years down the road. But look, we're 24. You know, we'll be 25 next year. You know, you. In my opinion, I'm not so sure I would go. Go down that path. So.
Yep. So, Scott, should we break down some of the action from the NBA draft that's just unfolded?
Yes.
The number one pick for the Atlanta Hawks was Zachary Risacher. I can't do it with a French accent. Risacher. I'm going to try it.
I heard him do it on the television.
He does it a lot better than I do.
He's supposed to.
But like we said yesterday, they've picked a player who can fit a specific role and address a specific need for their team. What's your reaction to that pick?
Wasn't totally surprised. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, Bo, when Alex Saar didn't go in there. And I talked to you about the tiering of it. So they probably had those two players in a like tier. Richardson came in. Again, the league is trending towards having multiple wing players that have some versatility. He can shoot the three-point shot, you know, so anytime you can add to your ability to shoot, you're going to look at that. So solid pick by them, and it'll be interesting to see how long it's going to take him, though, to really impact the NBA. Because I watched this young man play a couple of years ago. I like his skill, but he's got to get a lot stronger, more physical, and a little tougher. So let's see how he adjusts and adapt. But you know, when you draft a guy number one, there's pressure to put him out there early in play. So let's see how he does, you know, to open up next season. But, you know, hopefully for the Hawks, he turns out to be a solid player.
At number two, the Wizards picked Alex Saar. So it's back-to-back French players at the top of this draft, just like last year when Wembanyama was number one out of France. I don't know what's in the water in France right now, but we need to get some of that over here. Alex Saar to the Wizards. I guess that's maybe why they moved up Abdia, so they have more minutes at the four, because Saar said he wants to play at the four more than the five. Great defender, versatile offensively, 7 foot with guard skills. I like what he can do there. Do you think that he has a higher star potential than the number one pick in this draft?
You say star potential, but do I think he has a little higher ceiling? Yes, just because of his athleticism. He is a better athlete. He's longer. He has an ability to really impact the game defensively as he learns the NBA game and grows because of that length, athleticism, and ability to block shots. And he's just scratching the surface on offense, and the film I've watched on him, his shot form is not bad, and he showed the ability to step away from the basket and make some shots. So now this is when everyone in the NBA talks about development and the importance of developing players. Washington is on the clock now, as is Atlanta. You draft these young players like this that aren't really ready or finished products, and how do you get them better in a hurry to be not only become good NBA players, but good NBA players that can help you win? Because both of these franchises obviously are in the lottery because they're not winning, and the Washington Wizards haven't won in a long time, and they're coming off the worst season in their history. So we'll be interesting to see how quickly they can develop him so that he can help them start to win down the line.
The Houston Rockets, the number three, picked Reed Shepard, the best shooter, according to a lot of people, in this draft. And I think that's something that they can definitely do with adding to that team as they try to make the playoffs this season. Do you think he's going to have an instant impact in the NBA?
Well, I know Houston wants to win right away. And so a lot will depend, I'm sure, what Coach Udoka feels about him being able to get a lot of minutes. The fact that he can shoot, that obviously is a big plus, and he's a very heady player. Seems like he has a good feel and good knowledge base of the game. The key will be who can he match up with defensively? And so the sooner you can figure out how he can match up defensively, I think the quicker he gets on the floor for the Houston Rockets. So that'll be interesting to watch. But again, you're drafting that high at number three. You got to try. You have to figure out some sort of plan to work him in to at least get enough minutes where he can grow in his rookie season. But you know he's going to be playing behind a guy like Fred VanVleet, who is, as we know, is a really good guard in this league.
Well, you might have noticed BJ Armstrong is not with us. He's not been with us this week because he's in New York for the draft, and he just popped up on my TV, all smiles, as Isaiah Collier has just been selected number 29 by the Utah Jazz, which is a great pick. I can't believe he slid all the way down to 29. Scott, what are your thoughts on that before we get back to the regular draft order? Yeah.
First of all, I am super happy for Isaiah Collier. I've had a chance to spend time with him during this draft process. Outstanding young man and very talented young man. Coming into this season, on most draft boards, he was conservatively top five, top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about it yesterday, didn't have a great season. And so you see how things can happen in the draft and momentum can work for or against you. But I'm just glad he landed in a great place like Utah. Danny Ainge knows what he's doing there. They've got some other good young talent there. I really like the coach there in Will Hardy. And I'm happy for our guy, B.J. Armstrong, that his guy got in that first round. Because I didn't anticipate him having to wait this long to be drafted, quite frankly. I saw this guy, even with the season he had, as a top 15-type talent in this draft. So, again, the great thing for Isaiah is everybody goes to zero now. Whether you were the first pick in the draft or the 30th pick tonight, they're all rookies and they all got to prove it over to themselves. So it's going to be, now you got to go play basketball. Where you got picked won't matter as much now. You got to go prove it and prove everybody else. If I'm Isaiah Collier, you look at those other 28 teams and you say, okay, this is what you passed on.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think there's anyone on this planet I would trust more making a draft pick for my team than Danny Ainge. We just saw the NBA champions being built around players that Danny Ainge drafted. And so I think he knows a thing or two about what he's doing. But let's go back to the original order. And number four, the Spurs, who arguably had the best draft night, they came away with Stephon Castle, who yesterday we talked about maybe even being the number one pick. Mm-hmm. They've now got a guy who they compare with Victor Wembanyama, who is going to make them absolutely formidable on the defensive side of the basketball.
I love this pick for the Spurs. I thought it was the best pick in that top 10, quite frankly, for all the teams. We talked about this yesterday. Stephon Castle, winning player. And I love winning players. San Antonio loves winning players, as you can tell by selecting him. He's going to bring versatility. And just imagine a guy like this who is a winner playing alongside a generational talent like Victor Wembanyama. This kid is going to be able to figure out a lot of things. He's going to get better. The main weakness right now in his game is his consistency on his shooting. That's the one skill that I always believe guys can get better at if they put the time in. I've seen it time and time again.
Oh, Scott, it don't matter though. Because even if those jump shots miss, we got a 7-foot, 100
Oh, I get
it. Down there to get the rebounds.
Yeah, you know, no, yeah, no, and that will come into play first couple of years, but he will need to start knocking them down consistently, and he will get there. I was just going to give you an example. I remember guy ended up being one of the greatest scorers. I recruited him coming out of high school. His name was Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady was not a good shooter at all coming out of high school, but you know he was a great player, great talent. Got drafted by the Toronto Raptors. After his first couple of years, they did a terrific job in developing him. Became an excellent perimeter shooter. You know, he could score, had the feel for the play. And so, and I can go on and on, but he just always sticks out to me because I watched a guy who in high school wasn't shooting beyond 10 feet to where then he was consistently a threat at three beyond the three-point arc. I mean, Jason Kidd was another guy I coached in college. Didn't start shooting threes until his eighth season in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens, and San Antonio is one of the best teams in the league year in and year out at developing young talent. So perfect fit all the way around, player, team, player. And I expect big things from Stephon Castle in San Antonio.
Now, the Spurs had a great draft night. The Pistons had the fifth pick. They were trying to move that pick all night long. They ended up selecting Ron Holland with that pick. Now, Ron Holland is a very talented basketball player. But why do the Pistons love picking guys that can't shoot the basketball that well?
That's the new regime there now, too. And they tell you, sometimes you get to a point in the draft, and this is one of those drafts. We talked about it because you didn't see a lot of star or top-heavy draft, per se. So then you may say to yourself, who's the best athlete on the board that we can develop? And that's what this says to me, that Ron Holland more than likely was the best athlete on their board. He's got some toughness, which will resonate in Detroit. Mm-hmm. He can defend. He's very similar to the young man they drafted last year, Asua Thompson. So there might be a tad bit of, you know, duplication there, but you'll figure it out when, you know, once he gets there, but having got athletic guys who are tough, who can defend, and now it's up to you to develop them and get them better as shooters.
Why they got Holland Fred Vincent in.
Yes. So they're putting Fred Vincent to work right away. With these two guys, and Ron Holland's shot may be a little ahead of where Asua Thompson's shot was coming in the door. So it'll be interesting to see. But you don't fail with a guy who competes and plays hard. You can usually find a role for him. Doesn't mean he's going to mm-hmm. be a star, but normally you can find a role for a guy who is athletic, tough, and competitive. Those kind of guys normally find a way to impact your roster.
At number six, the Charlotte Hornets picked Tijan Salloun, who you spoke about yesterday, even coming out and being the best French player in this draft. Mm-hmm. At seven, the Trailblazers picked Donovan Clingan, who I know the Memphis Grizzlies were desperate to get. They couldn't get up to get him. Interesting for the Blazers to get him, as they've already got DeAndre Ayton. So maybe his time dominating over there in Portland is going to come to an end sooner rather than later. But then at eight, the Spurs picked Rob Dillingham. However, he was traded away to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now, the Minnesota Timberwolves gave up a 2031 unprotected first and a protected 2030 pick swap to the Spurs. Now, I don't understand why you're trading a top 10 pick for a pick in 7 years' time while you're in the middle of a rebuilding process and you want to get young talent around Victor Wembanyama. It's interesting to me. And for the Timberwolves, credit to them. They're going all in and trying to improve their roster. They've got a shot creator they can now bring in off the bench who's going to be able to learn from Mike Conley and really improve his game. But this does move their luxury tax bill from $56 million to $84 million with just this first-round draft pick that they've got here being added to the roster. Aggressive move from the Timberwolves, but I like it because there was limited options for them in free agency. So, I like them going all in. But if you were the Spurs, would you have picked someone at that spot or would you have moved that pick as well?
No, I like it on both sides. And here's why. If you're the Spurs, But you have to be careful because they already have a lot of young players there. I mean, obviously, we know about Victor and his potential greatness or greatness he already has shown, but he's going to continue to grow. But they had other young players in the program before Victor got there. There's such a thing, Mo, as having too many young guys at once. It's hard to get them all across the finish line. Mm-hmm. So what I like about this is you get Stephon Castle, and now you're going to pour everything into Stephon Castle this year. This is your rookie for the year. Instead of trying to juggle two to see if they're going to make it and with all of the other young guys that are on the roster. So I like it from that standpoint, and I understand it from that standpoint if you're San Antonio, because Victor, because he's so talented, the pressure on them to start winning more really is starting this season coming up. Victor Wembanyama is, we talk about him being a generational talent. He's not trying to be on a team that's winning 20, 25 games. So I would expect to see the Spurs even do some things in free agency to add a little veteran help to this team so that they can fast forward their win total a little bit during this season. And now if you're Minnesota, like you said, didn't have a lot of ability to do much in free agency coming in the summer, to get a young player like Dillingham, who has an NBA skill, he can score the basketball. He is a legit scorer, even though he's a little on the smaller side, but they have a big, long team. So my assumption is they see him as someone that maybe can come in even in year one and be an off-the-bench scorer to provide a spark, energy off the bench. And hopefully, in best case scenario, let him learn a little bit from Mike Conley for, the next year or two. And then you got your backcourt with Dillingham and Anthony Edwards moving forward. So I like that move for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah, it's going to be very fun to watch him over there. At number nine, the Memphis Grizzlies, they missed out on Klingon, but they picked a big man in Zach Edey from Purdue. Yeah. I think that's great. You can now have Jaren Jackson Jr. at the four. They're going to have Ja Morant back on the court. They're going to have Desmond Bane. They're going to be fully healthy this year, fingers crossed. The one thing that does concern me about that is the time it takes Zach Edey to get up the court. I think Ja Morant can get up and down about 100 times in that same time period. And, BJ always says to me, you want to put the same kind of athletes together on the same team. But yeah. Zach Edey with his size and, he's not the quickest of players. That does concern me a little bit, but how do you like that fit in Memphis? Yes.
Well, I'm going to go back in time a little bit and look, and I'm not saying that Zach Edey is this guy, this center, or will he ever be this guy? But if you recall, when I was coming up, the Los Angeles Showtime Lakers, when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was upper 30s, young 40s, still playing, they would really run a four-man fast break a lot of times. Ultimately, and if they didn't get anything in the early offense, now Kareem got into the play. They posted him up. Now I don't know if Memphis is gonna, the coach is gonna be creative that way and want to do that. But that's, to answer your question, that's probably what you would have to do. Is okay, let Ja and company and Desmond Bane and all those guys get out on the court and see if he can score early offense. But now here comes Zach. If you don't score on that initial surge, you can play through him in the low post a little bit, which will be interesting because you don't see a lot of teams now, as we talked about, that are, he's a throwback center. He's a traditional back to the basket guy. You throw it to him on the block and he takes his time, he makes his move. That would be the biggest, most interesting thing for me to see how effective he can be at that, because, the bigs now are so much more athletic, faster. Like, and to your point, the game is at a faster pace. Can he adjust to that and still make people pay with his size? And he's improved every year, to his credit. So, and the bigger concern for him, even more so than the offensive side, to me, will be when they play those teams that have those stretch fives, and he's got to step away from the basket defensively and guard those stretch fives.
And at the 10th pick, the Jazz selected Cody Williams, brother of Jalen Williams, who plays for the OKC Thunder. But Scott, I wanted to ask you, because we could be here all night talking about every single one of these picks. Were there any selections from the rest of the draft that really stood out to you that you want to talk about right here? Because we've got the whole summer to talk about these. But
yeah,
what really jumped out to you from tonight's picks?
You talking about a match for a first-time head coach and player, Dalton Connect going to the Los Angeles Lakers at 17.
Yep.
The Lakers needed perimeter shooting. And I've mentioned that a number of times when talking about J.J. Redick and the type of players that not only Lakers needed but would fit his philosophy. And, you know, he was a great three-point shooter. His time in the NBA, he was going to want shooting on that roster. So that for him to fall that far.
I'm surprised he went down to 17.
I was surprised. I was almost certain he would have been in the lottery. But the only thing I can think of, again, is that bias against guys being a little bit older. We talked about this yesterday.
Yep.
Because he's 23 years old. But 23 years old is – a player can improve in his 30s. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the NBA and the NBA personnel can be a little short-sighted when you're looking at age and think, oh, well, I'd rather have the 18-year-old guy versus the 23-year-old guy. It doesn't mean just because a guy is younger that he's going to be better than the guy that was 23. This young man has experience. So he's a 5-year college player and he's physically strong enough. So I expect him to go in and give this team some minutes, meaningful minutes next year. So that was the pick after the lottery I thought that was most intriguing.
Yeah, there were a couple for me that were also interesting. I think the Thunder obviously getting rid of Josh Giddey just last week and then going out and picking a guy who in Nikola Topic who can't really shoot but is an elite playmaker. That was interesting. And he's going to take a year to rehab before he comes back. I also like the Miami Heat's pick at 15, Khalil Ware.
Yes.
They can now play Bam at a 4 and him at a 5, and that could work out to be really good. And Bam signed a 3-year extension today as well.
Mo, that's a great call on Khalil Ware, because I was remiss in not mentioning him, because he was one of the guys that was on my risers chart, if you will, in this draft, because he's long. He's active now. Now, you know, I was a critique on him. Now, he didn't play hard enough his freshman year or whatever. And sometimes it just takes big guys a little longer. But he competed his tail off at Indiana this year. He got better shooting the basketball. He's got touch.
You shot 43%, I think.
Yes. And now you're going to Miami. And our listeners know how much I respect the Miami Heat and their ability to bring people and players into their culture and maximize what they do. I expect this guy to have a real impact moving forward with the Heat. They got a good player there, and he's going to get better and better as he gets stronger. That'll be the big thing, just really working on his body. But again, the Heat, no one does a better job than the Miami Heat in terms of getting players into condition, in shape, getting them stronger. Again, like I said about the Spurs and the Castle, this was another excellent fit the Miami Heat.
I think the last one I want to talk about today is the Denver Nuggets trading up from 28 to 22. They got the 22 pick from the Phoenix Suns in return for the number 28 pick, the number 56 pick, and two future second rounders. That means the Phoenix Suns only had two future second round picks before the draft tonight. Now they have 5. So with a team with caps out on the money that they have, being able to have those picks in the second round can be huge. But Denver wanted to have Daron Holmes on their roster throughout this whole process. I think after he met with Denver, he canceled all his workouts elsewhere. Mm-hmm. They might have promised him that they're going to draft him. He could come in and give them some depth immediately, kind of reminiscent a little bit maybe of Jermichael Green. I think that's who they said on the broadcast. But just a player that can come in and solidify the depth for the Denver Nuggets at the forward positions. What do you think about that pick?
That's huge. Here, when you're talking about the Denver Nuggets, here's a team that's a season away from being world champions. So they understand what it takes to win a championship in this league. And we talked about it a lot on this podcast throughout the season. If there was a concern about the Denver Nuggets, it was their bench depth. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what caught up to them against Minnesota in the playoffs. So to identify a young player who's highly productive in college at Dayton, he's going to be coming into a locker room with one of the best players in the world, if not the best player in the world, in Nikola Jokic. So it's a great learning position for him, and they can take advantage of his athleticism and try to fast track him, because he's another guy that has some experience in college, but try to fast track his development so they can get him on the court and playing meaningful minutes, backing up whether it's at the five or backing up Aaron Gordon at the four. I'm not whatever they plan to do with him, there'll be opportunities and need for him to be able to play. And that's why I tell you all the time, Mo, and tell people, I know players going into the draft, they want to hear their names called at the, you know, highest possible place. But I'm telling you, if you're a player, you want to go where there's the best fit. So, okay, great if it's the number one, great for you if it's the number one team, you know, that has number one pick. But if it's 22, 28, 29, like we talked about Kyrie or whoever, it's about the fit. And you get an opportunity, and that organization believes in you. So the number where you got drafted won't matter once you start playing games or playing basketball and having some success. So, good pick for them, and it's a bonus for that young man that they wanted him so badly at that position, and so that they're gonna do everything they can to try to make him successful.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, especially the defensive side of the basketball coming in off that bench. But that's the NBA draft. Obviously, we've got a lot more to talk about, or we'd be here breaking it down. Scott, I appreciate you dropping the knowledge as always. Let us know on the Discord server, what did you think about your team's picks, and what do you think about the draft in general? There's a lot more to talk about, and free agency begins in just over a week, and the second round of the draft is coming up tonight. So we're going to see where Bronny James ends up. And
I'm going to be interested just to watch the second round as a whole, because again, that's the one thing that I can't share with our listeners that I have experienced that, because this is the first time going through it. So I would that probably more than anything, I'm missing tomorrow not being in that position.
Yeah,
just so I could really know how to execute it, you know. And I have thoughts about what, you know.
Oh, be careful what you wish for, Scott, because next year we might be in a war room somewhere getting ready for the second round of the NBA draft. So I'm just saying, be careful, because there were a couple picks tonight that didn't make too much sense to me, but I'm sure we'll talk about them as the offseason progresses. But yeah, as always, you guys, subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. Scott and I will be back with more very soon. So until next time, you guys know what it is. Get buckets.